Good afternoon. Today is April 3rd, 2017. This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Colleagues, today we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5521, Office of the Governor. What do we need to know about this, Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Office of the Governor, you have a public hearing on their budget bill scheduled for today. The agency is primarily funded by general fund. There are also lottery funds, however, that support a specific program in the governor's office budget, which is the Regional Solutions Program. Regional Solutions has staffing in the governor's office budget. The actual funding for projects, to the extent that the budget includes funding for Regional Solutions projects, is funded in the OBDD budget. So there's a bit of a split there between administrative funding and project funding. There are also other funds in the governor's budget that are come from a number of sources. There are some state government service charges that are levied to support the diversity, equity, inclusion, and affirmative action and business equity programs in the governor's office. There is also certain funds that are transferred from other agencies to support positions in the governor's office. Finally, there are positions that are funded in other state agency budgets that you don't see being funded here in Senate Bill 5521 that report directly to the governor and function as governor's office positions, but that are funded in other state agency budgets. And this has been an ongoing concern and issue. Those of you who've been on the committee before have heard this issue before. And there are some organization charts that have been uploaded to OLIS that identify some of these positions that we can go through if you would like. Just to mention the framework, budget framework, in the co-chair's existing resources budget framework, there is a 5.4% reduction in general fund lottery fund expenditures from the current service level. As you know, the co-chairs were not specific as to agencies within the program area, but if that 5.4% were to be applied to the governor's office budget, that would be equivalent to a reduction of about $955,000. The governor's recommended budget already includes approximately $583,000 in reductions that can be used to meet that target. However, additional reductions would be necessary if the co-chairs did require a 5.4% reduction in this budget.
Perfect. Thank you. Gentlemen, welcome. Introduce yourself. The floor is all yours.
Yes, co-chair, Senator Manning, Representative Smith, and members of the committee. For the record, Nick Blosser, Chief of Staff for Oregon Governor Kate Brown. Thrilled to be here with you today. And I have with me Brian DeForest, the Deputy CFO for the state. So thank you for inviting me to appear. I thought I would just give a very brief overview and happy to answer as many questions as you would like. Next slide. Okay. So I thought I'd start with just briefly the values that we run the office based on. These three values kind of guide a lot of the work that we do. First, being open, accessible, and accountable, and transparent in all that we do. Deliver services effectively and efficiently, and reflecting the diverse experiences and communities of all Oregonians. The mission of the governor, we run the executive branch, as you know. We have the executive power of the state. We're charged with faithful execution of the laws that you pass. We're responsible for proposing a statewide budget and providing an executive branch leadership. So here's, this covers the array, you know, everything that runs through the executive branch, you know, comes across our desk. So every policy area, you can see them listed there. I won't go through them. We also have general counsel's office. We have local government relations and federal relations, which I can touch on a bit more because federal relations have been a growing part of what we've needed to spend time on the last few months. Executive appointments for dozens and dozens of boards and commissions. Constituent services. Our constituent services volume has grown from maybe 500 a week last year to 2,000 a week in the last few months. The state resilience officer, and of course, we directly oversee the Department of Administrative Services and the state chief information officer. This is my last slide. I just thought I would summarize very briefly what our main focuses are right now, and that is can be simply said as kids and jobs. So for this session, we're particularly focused under the governor's leadership on protecting healthcare for kids and education for kids. On the jobs front, we're particularly focused on rural jobs and infrastructure, including the transportation package. So that's my very brief presentation. I'm going to let Brian run through some of the numbers and then happy to answer questions.
Good afternoon. For the record, Brian DeForest. I'm the Deputy Chief Finance Officer for the State of Oregon. Glad to be here. I'm going to walk very briefly through the CFO presentation regarding the Governor's Office. As you have seen in other presentations, listing of the variety of governor's priorities, again, focusing primarily on jobs and kids. This is done through the various state agencies, you know, approximately 70, 75 state agencies across the state, including Oregon Health Authority, Department of Education, extending out to all of the local school districts and whatnot, building that seamless education system that runs from birth to pre-K, from kindergarten through 12th grade, up through the secondary system in community colleges and the university system itself. The emerging issues for the governor's office are really the same emerging issues that you'll see every biennium, and that is the issues change from biennium to biennium. If you'll recall, at the beginning of the session last or the last large session we had, there was a takeover in Malheur County that was followed by a tragedy down at the Umpqua Community College. Those kinds of situations take the front seat of the emerging issues within the governor's office. But then there is also the everyday issues that Oregonians face from time to time as well.
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
I know that those two that you mentioned got a lot of publicity nationally as well as statewide. But I'm wondering about those other issues, people who lost their homes to forest fires, people who lost their businesses to the bad winter that we've experienced with the concomitant flooding. And focus seems to always turn back to Malheur and Umpqua. And I'm just wondering, I understand that given their publicity, they have a cachet that others don't. But I want to make a case for saying there are a lot of places that have suffered calamitous one-off situations, and I hope those wouldn't get lost.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, those don't get lost. I mentioned the first two because they're the obvious. They're the big publicity. But at Department of Administrative Services, we're directed by the governor to maintain focus on all of the issues and to extend our view into the other agencies that are involved, including Department of Forestry, Housing and Community Services, Department of Revenue, and so forth.
Okay. As long as you've taken a little follow-up, Mr.
Please.
As long as you've taken a little break in your presentation, I'm going to interrupt you and get you off track again. We passed a bill in the Senate the other day that I thought was an idiotic bill, directing agencies to cooperate with resiliency. You've hired a resiliency czar. Why does the legislature need to tell you to do that kind of coordination? Oh, great and wonderful DAS.
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, I don't know the answer to that. Brian, do you? It seems like it's obvious. I agree with you.
Well, I voted for the dumbest bill, but I just think that telling you to do the obvious when you've got resources that are directed, many of us were waiting for the resilience officer to come up as sort of the quarterback and have a plan, and I don't know why we're telling you to do the obvious.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I don't know why you have to tell us to do the obvious either. When the Department of Administrative Services is sitting there as the oversight over state government, making sure that topics are talked about across state lines, and also working cooperatively with the executive leadership team, where we gather 25 agencies together to have discussions about this. I don't have an answer for you, and I apologize.
One other question. How often does the executive leadership team meet? And is everybody at the table all the time? I know you've got a natural resource cabinet, or at least there has been in the past. But of those 25 people, how long do they have to talk to the governor? Does everybody get to talk? Are there some that are more equal than others? How's that work?
Co-chair Senator Johnson, great question. So I think, as many of you know, I've been on the job now 7 weeks, and this was one of the things I was interested in learning as well. So when we say our executive team, we have an executive team within the governor's office of 8 people that meets daily. When I think you mean the broader executive team.
Who are the 8 that meet daily?
So myself, our 2 now deputy chiefs of staff, the general counsel, the communications director, the senior budget advisor, the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the governor herself. Okay. Now, the governor's not able to make every meeting, but the rest of us generally meet every morning. I think you may have also indicated the broader executive team in terms of state agencies.
Yeah.
So we have the enterprise leadership team, which is comprised of roughly the 24, 25 larger state agencies, meet every other week. I've been to every one of those meetings since I started. We also had an all-agency quarterly meeting that occurred, I think, last week that I went and presented to. And then there are, as you say, there's a natural resources cabinet. I have only gone briefly to that. There's a public safety cabinet. We just created a children's council or cabinet. And those meet roughly monthly, I believe. I think the natural resource cabinet actually meets every other week. So there's a lot of overlap and a lot of meetings. I'm trying to figure out how to optimize all these meetings. But does that answer your question?
Sort of. Mr. Chair, I was just trying to understand how the communication works, because I think prior to your arriving, there was sort of a paucity of the ability of all of the agencies to get a shot at the governor's very precious time. And I don't know how you can have a coordinated delivery if folks don't get to talk to the chief executive officer.
Co-chair Senator Johnson. So the governor went to the last enterprise leadership team meeting, actually, to specifically talk about cost savings in government and learn what agencies had to say. So and I think you know, the new deputy chief of staff we just hired, Barry Leslie, came from state agency land. And one of the intentions of that hire is to have closer coordination.
Good. Thank you.
The Office of the Governor budget has grown slightly over the last 3 bienniums. If you'll note in the middle and the right, that's the current biennium 15-17 and the 17-19 governor's budget. The combined general fund, lottery fund are flat between the 2 biennium. There's some slight growth in other funds. Half of that growth is attributed to a policy package. That policy package is to purchase some vans for local counties to help transport inmates from facility to facility, including the state penitentiary.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Why would that be in the governor's budget and not in DOC's budget?
Representative Smith, Senator Johnson, the extradition program.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So these are all extradited either from out of state into Oregon or from Malheur County to Multnomah.
Correct, yes.
Okay, that's the nexus. And I don't know, you might want to explain that. We have newcomers to the legislature who may not know that extradition exists in the governor's office.
Correct. We run a one-person shop for the extradition, for interstate extraditions, transportation within state. It's large. There is a portion of general fund, but then there's also some other funds where we recoup some of our costs and are able to funnel that down into support for some of the counties.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. How many people do you transport in an average year?
I know the answer to that, actually.
The new guy.
The new guy knows, Co-Chair Senator Johnson, because I just met with our extradition official last week. 200 was the number I was given. Okay.
And how many vans are you going to buy?
I think 3.
I think that's right. That's correct.
Okay, so is each extradition treated as a one-off trip, or?
Well, Co-Chair Senator Johnson, so we're extraditing people from Oregon to other states as well. There's this kind of interesting partnership between Oregon, Washington, California, Idaho, Montana, and then arrangements like across the country too. So we're I don't know how many we're actually transporting, but we know that we deal with 200 coming into state. But we can look that up and get that number to you.
Yep, so please. We send our vehicle to go get somebody in Idaho?
No, Co-Chair Senator Johnson. If someone is in Scappoose and needs to be sent to Maine, we have to take them to a certain point. Oftentimes they hitch a ride all the way to, on these vans within states to get to there.
One more question. What's the difference between a van and putting them in a police car? I mean, security is security. I'm just trying to figure out, in a time when we're going to be giving haircuts to a lot of budgets, why we're buying three vans to travel people around. What's different between a van and a cop car?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, in a past life, I was a reserve deputy with Marion County. And the police car out on the road is a visible presence and in community policing and is responsible for responding to calls. And the vans, a lot of times, I drove a van exclusively for Marion County, and my job was to go out and transport the person in custody, sometimes gathering two, three at a time. For instance, we would have patrols up in Mount Angel during Oktoberfest. And my job was to make sure that those cars were still out on the road policing, taking more calls while I did the busy work and transported the inmates. And a lot of times we're transporting other materials as well in that case. If you have multiple inmates that or multiple people in custody that need to be transported, you can decide between two cars or one van.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd love to know the price per vehicle.
And we can gather that.
Thanks.
The number of FTE inside of the office grew slightly in the current biennium and then drops off into next biennium. Again, there are some positions in the governor's office that are eliminated in the governor's budget. These are primarily positions inside of Regional Solutions.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
What kind of positions within Regional Solutions? Are you consolidating districts or?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, not consolidating districts, but there were positions that were added in the last budget that were deemed unnecessary, and so the office held them vacant. They did not spend the lottery dollars and are returning the lottery dollars, essentially reverting them back into the Economic Development Fund. And did this without sacrificing any achievements in outcomes or objectives inside of Regional Solutions.
It begs the question, how many vacancies?
Three.
Well, you may have said that. I apologize. Have you looked, follow up, Mr. Chair, have you looked at any other places inside Regional Solutions? I know before Mr. Wolf left that he had a pension for making sure that everybody sat in the same place. I come from the school of thought that I don't care where you sit. I want to know what you think and what you do. And it always struck me as, and I represent the Northwest Act, but it always struck me as absolutely anomalous that every Tuesday people from Astoria got in a rig and drove to Tillamook, even though they maybe didn't have Tillamook business, or they got in a rig and drove from Washington County to Tillamook, all reimbursed for mileage, all paid for travel. And I was just trying to figure out, I understood in a perfect world that having them all housed in academic institutions maybe made a difference, but I don't think we can afford that luxury, and it, my observation, and I'm the convener for my area, it isn't efficacious. Have you guys looked at any of those kind of consolidations?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, clarification. So you mean that the travel of the staff person for example, the North Coast, who may live in one place but is driving to his office in another place?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know where, I think it's, is it Mark Ellsworth as your person. I don't actually know where he lives or where his office is, so I would need to find that.
Let me give you a concrete example. The ODOT guy lived in Astoria, and because the penchant was to have everybody gather in an academic institution, the one that was picked in my area was Tillamook Bay Community College. So the ODOT guy would get in his car in Astoria, leave his work in Astoria, drive down to Tillamook, sit there for the required number of hours, get back in his rig, and drive back to Astoria. Ellsworth lives in Washington County. He gets in his rig, drives over to Tillamook, sits there the required hours, and comes home. I just never understood why that had value. And you can be just as nimble with a telephone and a computer 100 miles away.
Yeah, Co-Chair Senator Johnson, I see your point now. I came from the private sector for 15 years. We had a very dispersed staff, so I know exactly what you mean, and I think it's important to have people face to face at some point. It doesn't have to be weekly. So I'll look into that. I think it's worth asking. I know that part of the goal of the program is to get agencies to work more collaboratively, but I agree you don't always have to be in the same physical location to do that. So let me look into that.
One of the major challenges is many of these agencies don't have the ability to video conference. In today's world, Business Oregon still doesn't video conference.
Yeah.
Business Oregon, I mean, how can that be? And so many times these folks are all having to come together because the only other option is the telephone.
Well, and I agree, Mr. Kocher. Yeah, occasionally when they do what are called one stops, where they have all of the requisite agencies at one place at one time to hear a specific proposal so that the regulatory agencies can all react simultaneously instead of doing sequential permitting. That makes all the sense in the world, but you can schedule that meeting. This was just get in the car and drive to Tillamook, and that never made any sense to me. And one other thing that we can talk about offline, because I feel very strongly about the fact that Regional Solutions has turned into the bureaucracy that it was designed to fight. And that's another conversation for another day. But it got so bureaucratized the last time. And it's not your problem. It's Jason's. But, God, the pointless reports and the screwing around that could have been productive, helpful time is breathtaking.
Co-chairs Senator Johnson and Representative Smith, I'll just say that the lack of video conferencing is driving me crazy also. And I'm working on that.
Cool.
I can show you guys how to download Skype. It's really easy. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was part of what I was going to say, too, but I'll skip that. But I'll pile on Senator Johnson's thing here when she talks about the bureaucratization of regional solutions there. When I see, like, the org chart has to actually bend and go around the bottom of the screen there like that, that makes me wonder if there's not too many positions there. And if I'm wondering, and I'll wonder it aloud, is if there's any value in having that many coordinators for regional solutions in the governor's office. Couldn't that money be better spent? You know, the agencies that are going to end up with the money can work that out among themselves, possibly. So, comment on that?
Yes, co-chairs and Representative Nierman. So, I haven't spent probably as much time as I ultimately need to on the Regional Solutions Program, but my initial hit on it is meant to be the more entrepreneurial kind of cut through crap part of the office. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens now, I think at those three vacant positions, you know, would have been a little more, I think, than we need, but you'll see here that, you know, the Scott Fairley has in Eastern Oregon has a vast area.
Sorry.
The Mid Valley person has also a very large area. So it seems to me that right now the way it's set up with however many positions we have here is pretty optimized around the economic development unit. And Representative Smith might weigh in here too if you care to. But so if it's become too bureaucratic, that's a problem. My sense is, you know, and a lot of that depends on the quality of the individual staff person in that. And I think we have a new head of regional solutions in our office, Jason Lewis Berry, and I think he's so far doing a fantastic job, trying to suss that out.
Yeah, I would share really quickly. I think some of this is personality based. We have Scott Fairley out in Eastern Oregon. He's phenomenal. I mean, what he's able to accomplish is almost miraculous, and he's well respected, well liked, but he does cover a large area. He's able to pull it off, but he's probably missing a lot of time with his kids at home.
I might just add from a historical perspective, the question was when Regional Solutions first came into being, should they carry the card of Oregon Business Development Department or carry the card of the governor? And that was quite a protracted back and forth. Those of us that were around Ground Zero when putting this thing together thought they should carry the card of the governor because it added a certain gravitas to their convening authority. When an agency calls and says, come on down for a meeting, everybody goes, well, okay, well, whatever. But when the governor's person calls, they say, yeah, I'll be there at 3. And so it had a perception value that we thought outweighed putting them someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Representative.
I'm just going to chime in here, too. The district that I represent is Southern Oregon, and our regional solutions team, I think, is tremendously well integrated into the activities down there, promoting various projects. We've had a couple different people, both stellar, well-identified, really a very positive representation of the state, which is sometimes feels very distant from Southern Oregon.
Yeah, that's great.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I don't want to leave the impression that I'm being critical of my guy is wonderful, too, Ellsworth. The problem is that they were spending so much time leaping through bureaucratic hoops that rather than at home writing reports, I'd like to have them out in the field helping a developer figure out how to get ODOT access across a railroad line. That meant more to me than filling out this endless, mindless paperwork.
That no one reads.
That no one reads.
On that happy note, please continue.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I have a feeling I'm going to get back to the office and be ridiculed for the longest CFO presentation to date. Expenditures by category, and you've seen this chart with every agency. As you can imagine, the governor's office is full of people, and that makes up over 75% of the expenditures for the office. Services and supplies being the next largest. There is $100,000 or rounds to $100,000 in capital outlay. That is a one-time expenditure, again, for the bands.
Must be $33,000 per band.
Thank you, Mr. Blosser. Well, I was a liberal arts guy. I can at least divide 100 by 3.
The funding sources for the governor's office, as you can imagine, general fund is the predominant funding source. This supports the policy staff, all of the executive appointments, again, the majority of the arrest and return program, or the extradition program, as we referred to it earlier. There are lottery funds in the governor's office. This is exclusively for regional solutions. The lottery funds are from the standard lottery fund distribution or that you will see later at the end of session bills as they come through. And half of that funding is earmarked from what would otherwise go to the counties themselves. We do have assessments to state agencies to support the diversity and inclusion program as well as economic and business equity.
Mr. Chair, I want you to win the prize for longest presentation. I would like to just note for the record that on some of the intergovernmental transfers for lottery funds, this just caused me to think of it, there's a little bit of disagreement with the counties on exactly how some of those calculations were arrived at, and I think your committee may deal with some of that, and Co-Chair Gomberg and I may deal with some of it, but there appears to be a slight disagreement in arithmetic right now.
Since that's rhetorical, I'll move on to the other revenues. We do revenue transfers from other agencies to support various services within the governor's office itself. Constituent services being one of them, and we get this question every biennium, so I'm going to go ahead and answer it. Who's helping with constituent services? PERS is an agency that will contribute to some of the staffing as well, because we get a lot of PERS questions coming straight through the governor's office, and so we ask them to help participate and support those positions. There's a funding for workforce policy.
Before you move on, the constituent services is a function that I very much appreciate, and I think judging those of us that may have used the in-district day to do town halls, the constituents are pining for attention and engagement. The thing that I've worried about with constituent services, for those of us that are very close to our constituents and have a very tight pulse on what's going on, I have respectfully requested some kind of information from your constituent services people. If you're working a thing in my district, a case management, I don't want to find out about it at a dinner party. I want to know if you're engaging. I also want to know if you're doing it. I won't waste my time doing it. And I'm not sure that the free flow of information about, you know, we're doing Mrs. Smith in your district, Senator Johnson, I don't know that that's occurring at a regularized level.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I share your frustration. In DAS, we end up with the same thing. Four people asking six people the same question, and the biggest concern that we have is the constituent getting the answer? Are they getting a single solid answer, or are they getting five different answers, which is far worse?
And or are they forum shopping and just burning up time?
Exactly.
Can I...
Please.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, my understanding is that our constituent services people don't act like caseworkers, maybe like the legislative aides do. They are really trying to find the agency that's going to help them. So there's mostly a handoff. I'll confirm that, but that's my understanding.
So let me, I'm going to switch gears really quick. I'm looking at the flow chart of positions. Steve, does this represent all positions within the governor's office? What I'm struggling to see is I only see a handful of receptionist and assistants.
Yes, I believe this does, and that there are no...
On the bottom of this one?
Yeah.
These are all assistants.
Okay.
They just kind of end up reporting through our operations person, okay, even though they work for the...
Okay, because I'm looking at general counsel. I'm assuming general counsel and deputy general counsel have assistants to help them with work that they're undertaking.
Co-Chair Smith, yes.
Okay.
And I think that's, it's a matter of how the flow chart's kind of
got
just
it.
Laid out.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, when Mr. Blosser was kind enough to come to my office, given the high amount of turnover, I asked for an org chart with names on it, just simply because there's so many new faces that it would be helpful to have those positions identified with the actual incumbents.
I would think that'd be great if you could pass it to this whole committee. I think that's a great idea.
No problem.
All righty. Any other questions or comments? Representative Gumberg.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry. I don't want to break up the presentation here. Are you towards the end and we're having open-ended questions?
Representative Smith, Representative Gumberg, I'm here at your pleasure. This is my biennial lesson in humility. So,
well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As long as we're this far off track, let me take us further. And Mr. Blosser, welcome. You should see how we treat people that have been around for a while. I wanted to talk for a moment about something that's not in your presentation, and it's something I've been talking to every agency about, and it has to do with the amount of money that Oregonians owe Oregon. The Secretary of State in the last 20 years has done six audits on delinquent debt. And the only thing they say consistently is that year after year, the amount that's owed goes up and that nobody's in charge. Nobody's in charge, and that we're not collecting the money, mainly because nobody's made a priority to collect what is now $3 billion in receivables across the state. And the Secretary of State's audits has made a number of recommendations, everything from compiling a vendor list. They say we've got 9,000 people that are doing business with the state of Oregon that also still owe the state of Oregon money. And that if we just cross-checked those two accounts, we could collect something like $750,000 a year. They make other suggestions like publishing the names of our larger debtors and sending them a warning letter saying, we're going to put your name on the webpage if we don't hear from you in the next couple of weeks. Or we just had the folks, the good folks from the state lottery in here a few days ago. They told us that they cross-check for delinquent child support before they make payouts, but they don't check with other agencies. So the question is, how do we begin to get a handle on this growing and significant problem? At a time when we're cutting budgets, how do we go home and say, oh, by the way, we're not doing a very good job of collecting the money that's owed to us?
Co-chairs, Representative Gumberg, you know, since we met and we first talked about that, it's funny. Last night I had dinner with a friend who is the head of research at IBM's whole debt collection. They have like 600 employees in Washington County, and I asked him, so if you had this problem, how would you approach it? Because, you know, you could resell the debt portfolio, you can optimize the collections in various ways. And I want to follow up with you on that, because I think there's really something there that we should be doing a better job. I know you're working on some legislation. So I just want to say I actually have been thinking about it and working on it since our conversation. Brian, did you have something to add?
Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg, the legislature in the last session passed Senate Bill 55, adding three positions to the Department of Administrative Services inside the Chief Finance Office. Those positions are on board, they are up and running, and beginning to better coordinate the reporting for receivables, better job of setting policy, and then most importantly, providing training out to the agencies. And I know that there is legislation, I've done the fiscals on them, to help strengthen that in coordination with the Department of Revenue as well. So I think the first step was taken last biennium in what the legislature passed in Senate Bill 55, and we continue to strengthen that.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that. We passed 55, which created those three positions in DAS, and now DAS has recommended Senate Bill 89, which is working its way through the process, which, as far as I can tell, takes it out of DAS and sends it off to revenue. Seems to me that the issue is getting further and further from the second floor here, and I'm just trying to understand how it fits into the overall priorities.
Chair Smith, Representative Gomberg, it doesn't take all the three positions nor the responsibilities entirety to the Department of Revenue, but rather the debt collection itself and consolidating it in Department of Revenue.
All right. Appreciate that clarification.
I just have one more set of questions. Talk to me about the folks we have representing us back in Washington, D.C. on behalf of the state of Oregon. In my view, in the Capitol, we have legislators. We have government
lobbyists
who can only get into a Democrat office, or lobbyists that can only get into a Republican office, and then we all know the lobbyists that are able to work with everyone. How does Governor Brown make sure that her vision gets implemented, gets carried, but at the same time also is able to deal with the chaos that is Washington, D.C. right now?
Yeah,
how do you balance that?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith. We have a single person, Drew Johnston, we have a small office there, one person. When I was there in my first week at the National Governors Association, I asked other states the same question. I think Washington has one person. I think California actually has six or seven. The governor has made two trips to D.C. in the last 6 weeks. A lot of that has been coordination of meetings with, you know, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Administrator of the EPA, and having a person there who's really monitoring the legislation, able to deal with logistics, knows the staffers at those places. That those levels of things have not been the lobbying, the partisan side of things, like you say. We don't have a big lobbying presence there, though. So it seems right now, given everything that's going on, it's about the appropriate level. If anything, requests from agencies have skyrocketed in terms of, you know, to the governor's office about what should be our response to a budget cut in EPA or in the Department of Education. And so our person there is able to kind of try to figure out what we know to date that we can respond to, that we can then give back to the agencies. I mean, we've had to create a federal response team just within the governor's office to field all the requests from agencies.
Do you think we're missing out on any potential opportunities by having only one person back there?
Commissioner Smith, we might be. We do have some. So, like, on the topic of healthcare, you know, I know our OHA director, Lynn Saxon, has been there a couple times. I mean, we do. Some folks do go there from agencies, okay. But we might be.
I would just hate to lose out on an opportunity because we only have one person back there. I mean, all it would take is capturing one opportunity to pay for one of those positions.
Commissioner Smith, I will say we're a member of the National Governors Association and also the Western Governors Association, which are bipartisan entities, and the Council of State Governments, and they provide input and expertise to us as well. But
how would you describe Drew? Is he able to work with all folks?
Yeah, Commissioner Smith, I would say yes. I mean, he. I think he worked in the treasurer's office here before going there. I think, do you know?
His family pedigree is substantial. His father was Brian Johnston, former legislator.
I know who he is.
President of Willamette. I grew up with his mother. I've known her since I was a little girl. Drew comes from a very well-known Oregon family that I think has a tradition of bipartisanship and ability to work across the aisle.
Got it. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All righty. Any other comments or questions? Would you like to wrap up for us?
He's having such a good time. Why would he want to stop?
Chair Smith, I will do everything I can to make sure that I'm done within the next 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you.
As with all state agencies' presentations that you will see, the standard statewide adjustments were done in the governor's budget as well to reduce the DAS price list, state government service charges, and the attorney general rates in the governor's budget. As all other agencies are asked, there were a list of cost savings measures, also known as the 10% reduction list, which was expanded to 15%. And these would be the outcomes if further reductions were taken inside of the governor's office itself. The ability to communicate across agency lines and out to constituencies would be limited, as well as extradition costs, regional solutions, and the like. Key performance measures.
Go back to the, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please.
If you would, go back to the last. An issue that continues to have not only specific ramifications for the governor's office, but also sort of global interest is the response to public records. I don't know what the general direction is right now for creating a more unified, timely cost that isn't cost prohibitive. What's the plan on public records? I had a bill this session that went exactly nowhere that would have turned all of the lobbyists for agencies into the stewards of public records. And it never saw the light of day before the priest was called. But I'm curious, what's the current thinking in the center office about public records? Because there's been a lot of press generated about it.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Co-Chair Senator Johnson. So I'm not the expert. Gina Zedlick in our office is really, like, this is one of the key things she's working on. In addition to the public records advocate position that we're supporting in the Secretary of State's office, I know we're trying to figure out standards for agencies in terms of the system that they would use. From my impression is there's no consistency across agencies in terms of responsiveness, cost, all of that, and we're trying to get a handle on that. So it's not a clear answer, but it's definitely something that I can have Gina follow up with you on.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you. And if there is a work product, give it to the professional staff and share it.
Yeah.
Chair Smith, I'm not going to read through each of the key performance measures. There are five, three on this slide, two on the next. I will point out that the office does continue to struggle in the certified industrial sites and as well as the state hiring. However, I will note that I had just spoken with the Chief Human Resource Officer and Serena in the governor's office. State hiring is trending up in terms of hiring women and hiring people of color as well. So we are on the upward trend in that area.
Can you go back one slide really quick?
Mm-hmm.
So on those certified industrial sites, that's an interesting measure that the governor's office has chosen to utilize, because so much of that is dependent upon the community and their desire to participate and their desire to financially have the resources to work through this process. That might be one of those measures you want to reevaluate. So much of that's outside of the governor's control.
Chair Smith, I agree with you.
Yeah. Senator.
The one other thing that I might add is the percentage of participants who rate the regional solutions process is very good to excellent. What's that mean? I got my project built. I like Mark Ellsworth. They showed up at 3 when they said they were going to show up at 3. I think that might be so nebulous. At least in my district, we have used regional solutions to work through some of the gnarliest problems. And occasionally we hit one that says you can't get there from
right
here. And I think for the governor's office to be subject to, the same with the certified industrial sites, to be subject to criticism for things that are largely beyond their control, perhaps isn't the best measure.
Even when they do an excellent job.
Yeah, right.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, these key performance measures, which I inherited, are quite odd to me. They don't seem to measure really the key things that we do. I mean, some of them, but So, you know, it's one of my goals is to reevaluate these and bring you and our own office better performance measures that we can all discuss. Does that make sense?
I would even add the last one as goofy.
Yeah.
In the most cost-effective manner. The most cost-effective manner is to probably slam somebody in the back of an old beat-up patrol car that's been to the moon and back, and you're going to buy three vans at $100,000. Do you flunk because you're buying new vans? It strikes me as kind of weird.
Agree.
Okay.
That must be along customer satisfaction, right?
I don't think the offenders are going to be real satisfied with one another.
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Cochair. So you, just to go back to the next slide on slide 9, which one of those is trending up that you were saying?
Chair Smith, Representative Fahey, the last one, the state hiring.
Okay.
I would share with you, I know the governor views that as important, but I would pass a message from the legislature that is important to all of us to make sure that, you know, we're well represented as a state.
Chair Smith, in the enterprise leadership team, this is emphasized. Equity is emphasized, diversity is emphasized, inclusion is emphasized at every meeting.
Senator Johnson.
I'm going to take the liberty of channeling Senator Manning. It's got to be meaningful. Mm-hmm. I was a woman-owned business for the purpose of the federal government when I was in the helicopter business. Somebody checked the box saying we talked to the woman. Senator Manning was holding forth in, I have to kill you if I mention anything that happened in caucus, but, you know, it's not good enough to say we have an African-American sub. They're here in name only. We didn't call them to do any work. We went out and found the cheapest and checked the box. It's got to be meaningful. And there can't be bars to letting folks be hired. Bonds, for example, that are beyond the means of a small company. We all want everybody to get a fair shot, but there seems to be, and forgive me if I'm lying here, Senator, there seems to be an opportunity to game the system to move the numbers without meaningfully engaging protected classes.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I was involved in some of the meetings early on with the last chief of staff during her tenure, and we talked about the priorities of the governor and establishing or adjusting policy advisors as such. And the issue of diversity and inclusion and equity came up, and it was determined that this is a value that underlies everything, that it shouldn't be a set-aside goal in and of itself, but rather should be integrated and woven into the fabric of how state government operates.
That was great. Thank you.
Representative Gumberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Again, on this first key performance measure, I think it was last session where we expanded the group of classes that we were aiming at to include disabled veterans, and then changed the name of the entire department. Is that reflected in this performance measure, or am I off in my memory?
Chair Smith,
is it COVID?
COVID. Yes. I'm not sure that I know the answer to that question. We'll have to return.
Question?
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Co-Chair. On the question of state hiring, this is not exactly the point, but something I've been thinking about. I think I would suggest that there's a much broader workforce issue, which is we've heard consistently from every department that's come up here virtually, the issues that are approaching us in terms of the number of our members of the workforce who are approaching retirement age,
mm-hmm.
yeah. starting off with DAS and 44%. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that there's really a conversation that needs to be had about how we structure state work, the work to be done, and in doing so, how we attract the next generation and the next generation of workers into the system. Because everything we here, at least, is that the kind of attractions that, you know, got us 30-year workers in retirement are not going to work in this generation. At the very least, people are going to come and go. So I think that would be a really, you know, and I don't know if it sits in the governor's office or someplace else, although I think it starts at the top. I think that conversation is a really important one for us to put on the agenda soon.
Chair Smith, Representative Marsh, this is a topic at the Department of Admin Services, primarily with the Chief Human Resource Officer, mm-hmm. But we have these conversations with the Chief Finance Office, with the Chief Information Office, with the chief administrative office as well. This transition from boomer through Xer into millennial. We have all three generations, and those are broad categories, obviously. We have all three of those generations inside the chief finance office. It is a tremendous challenge at times. I am technically a baby boomer, though I associate better with the Xers, and I don't understand the millennials at all. They do weird things like write with dry erase markers on glass, just free thoughts. And their style is completely different. And so we in the CFO, we've changed the way we even sit in the office to help attract that next generation and accommodate them, because 8 straight hours in a chair is not the way they operate. That's not the way they can be most effective or efficient. And so we are learning to adapt with them as well and listening to their ideas in a fresh new way. And the CHRO is looking to spread that across state government. We know that in terms of it, I could bring a chart at some point in time where we show the number of FTE or the number of available workforce people in relation to the number of retirees is changing dramatically. And we have to adapt or we will not survive.
No, I follow up. I think that's absolutely true. I think actually the conversation could go as far ranging to looking at the kind of fundamental benefits even that we have traditionally offered to see whether those are really the ones that are going to keep and attract a workforce that, again, at best, is probably coming and going a little bit.
Senator Johnson.
I think while simultaneously keeping an eye on the fact that we don't want to compromise safety by policy bills that we're passing, I can't imagine an ODOT worker with active traffic right next to them and us making an accommodation for somebody coming to work stoned. I can't get there. Now, I'm a boomer, so I have just offended anybody that's younger than 60 in the room, but...
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I'm under 60, I'm a boomer, I'm not offended. As a matter of fact, this is the most fun I've had in committee in a very long time.
All righty. On that note, any other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you so much for being here. Steve, is there anything we need to think about, or are we good?
You're good. Tomorrow you'll be hearing the budget of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. And there's also a policy bill that you'll be hearing a public hearing on that's relating to the Oregon Geographic Information Council.
Perfect. I would just share. Oh, Senator, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the tendency, and I was teasing Mr. Blosser about this, to blame the dead guy. You know, I haven't been here long enough. It was the other guy's fault. This has actually been a fun exchange. And I appreciate the fact that everybody has enough self-confidence and enough professionalism to say, I might not know the answer. I'll get back to you. That's cool. I'd so much rather have that than the BS-orama that has characterized some of these other ones. You heard that word here first.
Yes. Co-Chair Senator Johnson, I have a list of follow-ups for you, so thanks.
All right. So I would just share, gentlemen, on behalf of the co-chair and the committee, please send our best to the governor. Let her know we appreciate all that she's doing for Oregon. We appreciate her leadership, and let's call it a day.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Michael, are we good?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to wrap up.
We're adjourned.
Michael, are we good?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to wrap up.